Hello and welcome back to another episode of the I'm Learning Mandarin podcast. On today's podcast, we discuss the world's most popular language app, Duolingo. I've long been a critic of Duolingo, having spent a ridiculous amount of time completing the Mandarin Duolingo tree as a beginner. I've previously blogged that I found that my progress during that period was almost imperceptible, and subsequently discovered other language learning tools which I found to be far more effective for learning Chinese. So on today's podcast, I wanted to open up a balanced discussion about the pros and cons of Duolingo Chinese. And joining me to discuss this are two guests with experience of using the app and fascinating perspectives. Teo Valdez is a Doctor of Education candidate at American University. He's an experienced language learner and Spanish teacher who's also studied Mandarin. Carl Baker is a language app designer whose free flashcard app Mandarin Vocabulary Builder is available for all Android phones. I've included links to both of their social media profiles in the description. Okay, so welcome everybody. On today's podcast, we've got two exciting guests and we're going to talk about the topic of Duolingo, which is the topic of a blog that I wrote on Duolingo Chinese. And I'm quite critical of Duolingo Chinese for a variety of reasons that we will get into. But I wanted to discuss this to have a maybe slightly more balanced edition than my own, than just having my own personal view on this. And for that reason, I've invited two guests. One of them is Carl and one of them is Teo. So Carl and Teo, first of all, Carl, could you briefly introduce yourself and tell us about why you're interested in Duolingo, what your experiences have been?
I'm Carl. I've been learning Chinese for about 2 years now. And my reason for being interested in learning Chinese is because I met my wife about 2.5 years ago, who's Chinese. And her English is great, but I wanted to be able to connect more with her family who live in China. So I started using Duolingo to learn Chinese about a few months after I met her. And actually, I had used Duolingo before that a few years previously. I used it to learn Spanish for about 6 months, and that was because I had a holiday coming up to Spain, and I just thought I'd give it a go to learn a few phrases. So I looked for an app on the Google Play Store which teaches languages, and I saw that Duolingo was one of the most popular, so I thought I'd just try it out. I was intending to be just a bit casual about it and not very serious, but as soon as I used it, I found it very addictive and I instantly became hooked to wanting to use it every day. And I was commuting to London at that time, so it was about an hour on the train to work and an hour back, so that was the perfect time to use it. And I used it every day for about 6 months to learn Spanish and actually completed the whole tree to the end. After that, I could read newspapers to some degree, maybe about 60 to 70% comprehension, but I turned on the radio in Spanish and was able to understand less than 5%. So I don't think it was too helpful in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll go into some of those experiences a bit more in depth later. But Teo, what's your experience generally been like of Duolingo? Why did you start using it in the first place?
Well, I'm a language teacher myself, and I first dabbled in Duolingo with some random languages, like a little bit of French, a little bit of Italian when I was going to Italy. And one day I kind of just like burned through the whole Spanish course maybe 3 years ago, just like to see how fast I could do it because my Spanish was pretty good. But I started learning Chinese maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I've mostly done Duolingo in Chinese. I started off with another app called Hello Chinese because Duolingo seemed a little bit hard at first. But then after I finished the free portion of that, I moved back to Duolingo and I just kind of do it. I do at least like a lesson every day. And I'm looking forward to talking about it with y'all.
Mm, perfect. It's interesting something you said there, Teo, because it sounds like slightly unlike me and Carl, your experience, you came into Duolingo already as a language teacher and language learner. a quite experienced language learner because you've been learning Spanish for about 20 years now. And whereas we both came into it, Carl and I, as kind of inexperienced language learners, I think this tends to be quite a trend that a lot of people use Duolingo as the first introduction to language learning. And I think that comes with a different kind of set of problems. Whereas, Teo, would it be fair to say that you already kind of came in as a mature learner, like you kind of had like more experience to basically sift through what kind of will probably work, what won't work, and how to use it?
Yeah, I did come in with some ideas about what might work for me. For example, one thing that I decided early on not to do the speaking exercises because I just don't find them to be helpful or authentic, and I felt like they're kind of a waste of my time. So I know I always say that my microphone isn't working or whatever, so I don't have to do the speaking portion. I also think that I had maybe a realistic perspective on what Duolingo might be able to do for me, and saw it more as like a little piece of something that I can easily do to work on Chinese every day, as opposed to something that's actually going to do everything I need to get to proficiency.
Because I think you've like hit the nail on the head, because when I first came into using Duolingo, I think if you're an experienced learner and you see what Duolingo is, for an experienced learner, the question, will Duolingo alone get me to fluency, is not really a serious question. Like, I think there aren't very many experienced learners who would like ask that question or even entertain that idea. Whereas for me, coming into learning Chinese as kind of my first real experience of language learning in adulthood, that was a real question that I wanted to know. And yeah. Carl, I think you were similar, right, Carl?
So I thought that Duolingo might be able to get me there. And at the same time, I was using flashcard apps as well and graded readers, so it was kind of a combination. But after about 2 or 3 months, I kind of got bored with Duolingo because it wasn't really helping that much.
It's easy for me now as a more experienced learner, having learned Chinese for a few years now. And as I said, Teo, with all your experience, and Carl, you've also been learning Chinese for a few years now, to like forget how naive you are at the beginning. And like, really, for me, it was a complete mystery. How do you learn a language? If you search for this on the internet, the first things you will find are Duolingo resources and that kind of thing. So that for me poses somewhat of a problem, because what I came across when I searched for that online, I remember using Duolingo a few times and thinking, could this really work just to learn Chinese, to become fluent in it? So I searched it online. The first thing that came up was Duolingo's own website, which had a blog about how arguing that scientific studies have shown that studying with Duolingo has been shown to be as effective or more effective than taking university courses. And this is a blog that's still up there. And if you search for these kind of questions, these keywords like, can Duolingo get you to fluency? This is what will come up. So I kind of find that a bit misleading. Teo, from your perspective as a teacher, what do you feel about that?
Well, I think that, you know, it's difficult to compare the two. First of all, tons of people take, you know, Spanish 1, Spanish 2 in university, or Chinese 1, Chinese 2, and never really have like a conversation in the language outside of the class. So there's kind of an assumption there that, you know, university classes, like beginning level university classes, are doing a ton for developing proficiency, which is probably, I would say, not the case usually. You know, even a university class needs even more engagement outside of class to really make that progress towards proficiency. Also, it's about, I mean, I haven't seen the data in the study, but, you know, if people are self-selecting into Duolingo, doing the app because they want to learn the language and they are motivated, then you might see better results from somebody using Duolingo than somebody that is forced to take a Chinese or Spanish language class in college because it's a, you know, a requirement for graduation. So, you know, there's a lot of factors there. It'd be interesting to dive into that data a little more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I kind of think that, like, assuming that the claim is true, that it was as effective or more than the university course, then I would want to have serious words with whoever's running that university course.
I mean, I hate to say it, as a language educator, there's a lot of subpar language teaching that is happening out there.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Carl, you come at this from a slightly different angle to both of us because you're a language app programmer. From the perspective of a language app programmer and someone who's also used Duolingo, what do you see as some of the main flaws with Duolingo for Chinese?
Well, I think that it's quite important to make an app very addictive for your users because as an app developer myself, I know that whether you're using Android or Apple, your phone records how much you use apps and whether you come back to them every day, and that really affects the ranking in the app stores. So I can kind of understand why they've done it. What they've done is make the app very addictive so that people come back and use it every day. But you kind of have a trade-off there where if you want to make it more addictive and easier to use, then it can't really get you to that high of a level. If you want it to get you to a higher level, you kind of need to make it a bit more difficult to use so that it's drilling in the concepts better into your memory. And yeah, that you've got to find a kind of a balance there.
Absolutely. And Teo, I was going to come back to this point that Carl made about the addictiveness of Duolingo. This is definitely something I think can't be denied about Duolingo. I don't know if it's praise or not, but it's certainly addictive. It like gets you hooked. Did it get you hooked?
I mean, I think I've got like a 450-day streak or something. So I would say yes. You know, I do it every day. And I kind of, as a language teacher, I see that as the nice thing about Duolingo. You know, there's something to be said for getting a little bit of exposure to the language every day. And while it's like, it's not going to get you all the way there. Sometimes all somebody has time for is a Duolingo activity. And I think doing a Duolingo activity on a given day or a few days when you're not able to do other things to advance your language learning, I think that's better than nothing, you know? And I think also maybe sometimes you do a Duolingo lesson and then you're like, well, you know, I could also watch a YouTube video or something else. And if it keeps you coming back to the language, that's good. And that's kind of, you know, what's the most effective language learning tool is the one that you'll use to some degree. And so, you know, I've found that students will do Duolingo. And so I encourage it, though I'm very clear that they need to do some other things too.
The one issue I have with this kind of argument about the addictiveness of Duolingo is it's definitely addictive. But one thing I found was that after doing Duolingo for a few months, I even completed the tree. I found that I hadn't really progressed at anything like a rate that would satisfy me. So I moved on to trying to find other resources to use, other apps and things like that. And there were two things that I found that worked, I felt much, much better. And they were Graded Readers and LingQ. So LingQ is an app which allows you to import material and read it. Import material which is like suitable to your level, and then easily look up words by clicking on them and keeping a track of your progress by keeping track of how many words you know, what words you don't know. And Graded Readers are similar. They basically are reading material stories that you can immerse in, which are graded at your level and which you can sort of read at your leisure and listen to at your leisure and that kind of thing. And it was when I started immersing in that way that I started to see real gains. So I think although Duolingo gets you hooked, it's better to get hooked on something that's actually effective. And that's possible to do with the kind of tools that I've mentioned. So I think from an early level, you can already start immersing in simple stories like that.
I think that using Graded Readers from the beginning can be quite difficult because I used those as well very early on. And even though I knew all of the words in the stories, even the most basic level stories, I couldn't understand because of the grammar. I don't know if it would probably be easier in other languages like Spanish because of the large number of cognates, but in Chinese, I think it's very difficult to go straight into stories. So there is kind of a barrier there for the pure beginners.
That's a good point. And I guess Duolingo can bridge that gap to some degree in the same kind of way that maybe a beginner textbook would. So then the kind of decision is like, which do you find more entertaining, addictive, or which are you going to spend more time with, a beginner textbook or Duolingo?
You know, that's kind of what I think about Duolingo as well. For like, absolute beginners, I think it can give some foundational vocabulary that makes other content a little more accessible. Though one thing I'll add is that the Duolingo options for Spanish are much more developed. They actually have the stories element. And so, I mean, I so wish they had stories for Chinese, and I think that would make the Chinese Duolingo learning so much better. And similarly, you know, I need to go back and look at LingQ again, because I think they even have some Spanish resources. When I looked at LingQ probably about 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I just didn't like it. For some reason, it didn't click for me, and I probably need to revisit it. But what's really worked for me is Du Chinese. The Du Chinese app, I do that pretty much every day. And it, for me, like, it's less expensive than buying a lot of the graded readers. I probably have like 10 graded readers, but I can get so many stories through Du Chinese. I've always said, like, I wish that there was a Du Chinese for Spanish, because I would absolutely be recommending that over Duolingo, because I just think it's the reading material that I can get there that's appropriate for my level, and just tons of it, and the ability to listen. So I can, like, you know, play with an actual human voice all the readings that I'm reading. Like, to have listening and reading like that has been an amazing resource.
That's a really good point. And something you mentioned that reminded me that I remember I had a flatmate a few years ago who was doing Duolingo. And because of my experiences with Chinese, she was doing Duolingo Spanish. Because of my experiences that I'd previously had with Chinese Duolingo, I was saying, no, don't use that. Like, it's a terrible app. And then, like, I kind of watched her a bit more using the app. And I realized, oh no, actually, this has loads of features that Duolingo Chinese doesn't have. And actually, like, she's reading stories and that kind of thing. And I think that could be, like, really effective. And yeah, if the Chinese version of the app had that, then as a pure beginner tool, I think it could work quite well. What do you think, Carl?
Yeah, I think that would work quite well as well. I actually didn't use the stories feature when I was learning Spanish a few years ago, because I don't think they had it at that time. So does that work similarly to graded readers then?
I think it's somewhat like, I need to explore it a little bit more, but what I've seen is it's kind of interesting. It'll ask you questions about the story. You can listen as, you know, people are having a conversation, and you can engage with the story a little bit. So it's not just listening to a story, but yeah, they're highly engaging. There's sometimes background noise and sound effects and visuals.
Because one thing I wanted to come back to was this idea that we've all agreed Duolingo is very addictive, but sometimes people like make the mistake of thinking because something is addictive and you spend lots of time using it that it's enjoyable. When I reflect on my time using Duolingo, I can't say that it was enjoyable. I have a theory that no one actually enjoys Duolingo, at least not the Chinese version where there's no stories. People are spending lots of time with it, but if you actually reflect on, like, what you're doing, like putting these sentences into order, and are you really enjoying yourself in the way that you would be if you were reading a story, that kind of thing, or doing something actually enjoyable?
Well, I think there's been some research that shows that using an addictive app stimulates the same part of your brain as, like, using a slot machine. So, and gambling, and some people find gambling very addictive. And you can kind of draw an analogy where, as I've said, just because it's addictive, it doesn't mean it's effective for teaching you language. Just because a slot machine is very addictive, it doesn't mean it's actually effective for earning you money. And people who are very addictive to gambling, don't really find it enjoyable. They just want to come back to it because of their addiction. So yeah. Maybe they would say that they enjoyed it, but I'm not really sure if they did.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't think I particularly enjoy the lesson or two that I do of Duolingo each day. Yeah, I can't say I do.
But you still spend time on it, which is interesting, because I think there's two features of Duolingo which are slightly controversial, but which are effective at keeping people spending time with language. One of them is that the owl is very aggressive, and if you stop using it, it will send you messages telling you that. The other thing is that there's a competitive element. This one worked well for me. Duolingo was initially introduced to me by a friend whose Chinese was better than mine, And we used to use it at the same time. And then whenever he would be using it more than me, I would get a message from Duolingo saying, your friend has acquired this many points and you're this far behind. And I thought that was actually very effective. Did you also feel that?
Well, actually, I wasn't really interested in that element of it. I can see that other people would be. But for me personally, I just want to learn and I'm only interested in furthering my learning. And I actually found when you get to the end of a lesson in Duolingo, there's about four screens that you have to go through just to finish the lesson. And one of them is like an advert, which is fair enough. But another one of them is like, do you want to wager your lingots or something else? Because if you do a streak for another day, you'll get double the lingots or whatever. But I don't really care about that. I just want to learn. So that those extra screens just you had to go through to finish the lesson really annoyed me. And I actually bought the paid version of Duolingo for a while, which turned off the ads, but I didn't get the choice to turn off the wager your lingots screens, which really frustrated me.
Regarding the points in Duolingo or the competitive side of it, that motivated me for a little while. Like and the badges, like the accomplishments, like have you reached this level? And there was a goal to get to be first place in the Diamond League and things like this. And I have to admit, I was motivated to get those things. But since I almost got all of the badges or whatever, and now I just try to hang in there. But sometimes I'm trying not to fall out of my league, which is all pretty silly, but I'm a little bit motivated by that competitive piece and my rank within the leagues.
Yeah, those things definitely had an effect on me as well. I'm wondering, Teo, then, taking everything that we've discussed into account, and your role as a teacher, what advice would you give to new students who were, or maybe say a friend of yours who was thinking of taking up Chinese? What advice would you give them around Duolingo?
What I would probably say is if you try Duolingo and you like it, do just a little bit of it every day and make sure that you're finding other resources that you're doing along with Duolingo. Duolingo will allow you to hear some Chinese. It'll allow you to start seeing characters on a regular basis and getting exposed to the language a little bit, but let that be a bridge to other content and resources that are going to really develop your proficiency. It's less of the thing that's going to get you there and more of something that gives you a little bit of a prop up to be able to access more meaningful, useful resources.
Carl, I wanted to ask you a similar question because you've highlighted a couple of negatives, a couple of positives as well as Duolingo. You mentioned that the user interface is very, very good and that's inspired you when it comes to making your apps. But in terms of advice that you would give for a friend who was thinking of taking up Chinese, what would you say to them about Duolingo in terms of advising them?
I would say it definitely serves a purpose for the absolute beginners. It gives you an introduction to the language, lets you be exposed to it to a low beginner level, and it's very easy to use. So yeah, for the pure beginners, it definitely is better than nothing, but the advice I'd give is to combine it with other methods as well.
You know, something we haven't talked much about is the way that grammar is taught through Duolingo. And one thing that I think is positive, at least in my experience with Duolingo, is that I pretty much never look at the notes or the grammar tips or whatever. And I've been able to, I'm probably going to finish the whole thing, all levels in maybe 6 months if I keep going at the pace I'm going. I've been doing it for a long time. But I was able to make progress and kind of catch on to things without getting a lot of explicit grammar teaching. And I could see a lot of new learners paying a lot of attention to those tips and the grammar that they have in there when I kind of think it's not even needed. And so maybe something else that I would tell somebody is like, don't worry too much about like trying to memorize all the grammar information that is available on Duolingo. Just try to like go back and like gain intuition into what's happening and see if you can figure it out. And because I think a lot of beginner language learners will focus a ton on grammar, thinking that memorizing, you know, conjugation charts and, you know, vocabulary is going to be the path to learning, which I think it sounds like you'd be in agreement, Misha, that it's really through like communicative engagement with meaningful language that the language learning process happens.
It's interesting you say that because I would agree that in at least for studying Chinese, exposure to sentence structures, exposure to grammar patterns, rather than explicit explanations of the kind of theory underpinning those grammar patterns is more effective. And in that sense, Duolingo does expose people to a lot of grammar patterns. Where I'd slightly push back on that is kind of two things. One of them is that I still think that you'll be exposed to more grammar patterns ultimately if you go away and read content and stories that you like. And yeah, the right at the beginning stage, that's not possible. But that certainly helped me, and I found myself suddenly exposed to thousands of sentences, which is necessary, by reading graded readers, and that was more effective. The other thing is that some of the sentences that appear in Duolingo Chinese are incorrect. Like, I got a Chinese friend recently to have a look at Duolingo, and he sent me a couple of screenshots of just sentences that like were just kind of wrong. Like, there is definitely that problem. Now, Duolingo will say that certainly a lot of its sentences are unnatural in the sense that they wouldn't come up in every day. But Duolingo's argument is that that helps people remember them because those wacky kind of sentences, which are so strange, they will tend to stick in your brain more, that you'll remember them better. But I think like that kind of argument falls flat when they're actually like not grammatically correct. Or like, and that's definitely the case in a couple of sentences that I've seen on Duolingo, which I think is a major flaw.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, and I wonder how that ends up happening. You know, I will say, like, I've heard the same about some graded readers. I went to a language school in China for about a month, and I showed one of my teachers a graded reader, and she was like, some of this is not right. And I was like, oh no. Right? And it's like, as a beginner learner, like, how are you supposed to know the quality of the content that you're getting?
I also think that having the sentences be a bit strange is not really necessary. What's more important is the volume. So being exposed to thousands of sentences, which you can't really do with Duolingo as easily because each sentence is one at a time and you do an activity for the sentence. But if you're using a graded reader, you can just read and read much faster.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, another thing that happens in Duolingo is that the same sentences are repeated over and over again. So, you know, I kind of can get to a point where the new sentence in Chinese comes up and I don't even have to read or listen to the whole thing because I know this is the sentence that talks about the girl who wants to take an airplane to India or whatever it is, you know, and that, because that same sentence has been repeated over and over and over, but not in a meaningful way. It's just, you know, I've learned, instead of having to exercise my ability to interpret the language or, you know, understand the language, I've just kind of like learned, this is that sentence.
Exactly. Yeah. One thing I think is that argument about wacky sentences sticking in the brain more, I think I don't really agree with. I think a much better thing that's worked for me in terms of sentences sticking in your brain is how relevant are they to your life and how likely are you to use them when you go out and have conversations with Chinese people. And for that, Duolingo isn't really helpful because the sentences that come up are just not sentences that you would want to use with friends when you're in an everyday setting. And so I would think it would be much better to structure that around what sentences are you likely to use in your everyday life. I think that would be a much better way.
I sometimes think about like where the future is for like digital resources for language learning. You know, I wonder about, you know, we can say that Duolingo is addictive, but could it be immersive? You know, like, could we have a some type of digital resource where that adapts to our learning, that is interactive, where we could like talk with people and maybe, yeah, I think that there could be really amazing digital resources in the future. But I don't think that like we're really seeing amazing digital resources that compare with, for instance, even just having a conversation with the real person who's interested in your learning and willing to like accommodate their speech to help you understand and come along, you know.
Carl, as an up-and-coming young app designer, the future is in your hands, I guess.
Yeah, I think that that's a trap that apps need to avoid falling in, because if you make it really user-friendly and easy to use and addictive, then people will come back to use it every day. So it kind of doesn't really matter whether it's actually effective or not, because it gets loads of users and it will rank highly in the app stores, so it will be very popular. But people will be fooled, because later on, it's only later on that they'll realize that it's not actually effective.
How has your experience of using Duolingo informed the way that you approach designing your language apps, or has your experience informed it in any way?
So it's definitely made me concentrate on making them easy to use. In my app, I have a multiple choice method. I kind of based it on some aspects of Duolingo, where it shows you the Chinese flashcard and then asks you, there's four options to press the English one, and you have to guess the correct one. And I think that's quite easy to use. Also, I'm working on typing in the English meaning, which does happen on some screens of Duolingo, but not very often.
Perfect. Well, thank you, everybody, for your contributions. It's been a really interesting discussion. I'm sure our listeners will agree. And so once again, thank you, Carl and Teo, for joining us today.
My pleasure. Good to meet you. Take care.
Thank you. Great to talk to you.
Hey there, thanks for listening to this episode of the I'm Learning Mandarin podcast. If you're currently looking to improve your Mandarin speaking skills, you might like to check out my Peak Mandarin newsletter. Run by me and my friend Will Hart, we share exactly what you need to do to become fluent in Chinese based on our experience. Subscribe to the newsletter and we'll also send you a free copy of my ebook, Lessons from a Chinese Learning Phenomenon, which tells the story of exactly how Will Hart learned to speak near native level Chinese within a 1.5 year period, how I put his techniques into practice to become fluent myself, and how you can too. To subscribe to the newsletter, you can go to peakmandarin.com or click the link in the description. That's all for now. Until next episode, goodbye.